Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Don and Dude.
Shout out to the Arkansans. It's the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude.
Arkansans.
Or Arkansoyers. That's one too. Nope. This is the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Don with me. How you doing this beautiful day? You ready to hit the road, Jack?
All right, then.
Nobody gets a Wolfman Jack reference.
No, that's supposed to be Sling Blade.
Oh, God.
That was terrible. It is kind of Wolfman Jack. Was he from Arkansas?
I don't think so.
Okay. There we go. That's what I was going for.
All right. So this is, of course, the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums and the album format, and we find all kinds of ways to talk about them. We have a great show for you today. We'll be highlighting two albums created by artists from Arkansas. Don's going to ask us a deep question. We'll have some shout-outs to some other albums and album-related items we're digging, new releases, etc. And then, of course, we'll spin the wheel of musical discovery to learn where we'll be going on our next episode of this beautiful Bands Across America summer. But this week, welcome to Arkansas.
That's what I'm talking about!
Arkansas became the 25th U.S. state after the Louisiana Purchase and was originally inhabited by the Quapaw people, for whom it is named. Its capital, Little Rock, gained national attention during the Civil Rights Movement with the 1957 integration of Central High School. Renowned for its rich musical heritage, Arkansas shaped numerous genres and is home to Mountain View, the folk music capital of the world, making it a cultural treasure for music lovers. Its traditions, festivals, and historic venues continue to nurture and celebrate American music.
So yeah, there's a lot to choose from, a lot in the country space as far as music artists go. Glenn Campbell, Ashley McBride,
nice.
Joe Nichols, Charlie Rich. I have a Charlie Rich record.
Did you happen to see?
Conway Twitty. Love that name.
Yes.
But also some Southern rock from Black Oak, Arkansas.
Oh, yeah.
Almost went with them just because of the name. Scott Joplin with ragtime music. Levon Helm from the band. Neo, R&B pop star. Amy Lee from Evanescence.
Wake me up.
Save me. So yeah, a lot to choose from, but I think we've found some pretty good stuff. So we've got the albums queued up. The tank is full. And Arkansas is ahead of us. So let's roll out with our cha-cha-cha choices.
You choose me?
So my pick for an Arkansan is Johnny Cash with his debut album, Johnny Cash with his Hot and Blue Guitar.
What's the story with that title?
I don't know.
Just because he had a blue guitar?
I guess. I assume? Yeah. It's not a great title.
I've heard better, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's the debut album by John R. Cash, or he was known as J.R. as a boy. He was born in Kingsland, Arkansas in 1932. Johnny Cash with his Hot and Blue Guitar is produced by Sam Phillips, of course, okay. At the famous Sun Records. This is actually the first LP that Sun Records ever released. Yep.
He beat Elvis, huh?
Yep. So it features the Tennessee Two, which is Luther Perkins on guitar and Marshall Grant on bass.
Yeah, there would have been the Arkansas something, but there really isn't a rhyming number.
The Arkansas Seven or something. That's not a... It doesn't rhyme, but
you can't pay for seven dudes just for the name.
You couldn't fit them into Sun Studios. Yeah. Right, well, let's start off with the opening cut. This is Rock Island Line.
Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Well, if you ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station called the Rock Island Line.
Man, that's speed like Eminem.
Yeah.
Spitting rhymes.
I was thinking of the guy from Disturbed. Yeah, he's got that. Yeah. He likes to. I actually want to hear that. I want him to do this. So Rock Island Line is actually a traditional American folk song. They think it dates back to 1929. It was first recorded by Arkansas Cummins State Farm prison inmates in 1934. The most popular version up until this point came from Lead Belly, who was Huddy Leadbetter in 1937. So it's based on the Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific Railroad, which operated from 1847 to 1980. And it's about this train operator smuggling pig iron, which I guess is just, you know, some ore or whatever that's okay. used to, you know, make whatever metal
steel.
Stuff. I don't know if it's steel or whatever it is. He's smuggling the stuff through the toll gate, which he would normally have to pay for, but he lies and said he's got, you know, chickens and other livestock.
Yeah. I feel like this album could have been called Johnny Cash Loves Trains.
Oh, yeah. He certainly does.
Lots of train.
The old 97.
Yeah. Train and train related tracks. And the sound sounds like the sound, you know, that rail boom chicka boom.
Yeah. And so this is, you know, kind of a uniquely Cash version. He adds a couple of verses to it. But it, you know, it does kind of introduce you to that boom chicka boom rhythm from Perkins guitar and that kind of train rhythm. Cash sound that, you know, is a staple of his early career.
It's an appropriate opening track. Like it sets you up for what you're in for the most part. What comes later, the more familiar songs kind of break that up a little bit,
mm-hmm.
that whole train thing, but it's very trainy.
Yeah, this is probably a good introduction, particularly for people who might have been more like coming from the country world. You know, it's sort of, I think throughout the album, he's kind of got, you know, one foot in the country and one foot into more of like a rock sound.
Rockabilly, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fine line at this point between Johnny Cash and Elvis, right? Very close.
Yep.
I feel like Elvis went the way he did because of his model-esque handsomeness, and Johnny Cash was more of a gritty, good-looking, you know, more of the man in black, a darker persona, so less teen idol, you know, like Elvis was.
All right, well, let's hear one of the biggest cuts from the album. This is "I Walk the Line."
I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds.
So this album features, you know, several Johnny Cash originals. So it's kind of a mix of kind of traditional country or gospel songs with these, you know, kind of Johnny Cash rockabilly originals. So supposedly the inspiration for, I guess, the sound of the song came from him, messing around with a reel-to-reel tape recorder. He was doing guitar runs. He ended up, like, playing it backwards. And so somehow that got him to, I guess that sort of shaped his vision for the sound of this song. He described it as spooky church music.
Okay. But, I mean, it's not unlike the train music. And like, you know, there is train lines, but this is about relationships, right?
Yes.
But it still does have that tie that binds the songs together. You know?
What I think is interesting about the song is I think each verse or each time he starts with, you know, a key book, it's in a different key. And that's supposedly why he hums before each verse. It's to find the pitch.
Mm.
Yeah. That hadn't occurred to me before. But yeah, of course, so it's about sort of marital fidelity and devotion, you know, about his first wife, Vivian. So he said he was laying out his pledge of devotion.
Yeah. I think, I don't remember. I think I saw parts of the movie. What's it called?
Walk the Line.
Yeah. But the way that the movie is framed, it seems like it's about, what's her face?
June.
Yeah, about June Carter.
I guess Cash sort of intended it to be more of a slow ballad, but Sam Phillips, you know, being the star producer, you know, got him to do a faster arrangement, which became the standard. And of course, this was a big hit for Mr. Cash. All right. So was there a song you wanted to talk about from the record?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about one of the deeper unknown cuts, but I couldn't. I had to talk about one of my all-time favorite Johnny Cash songs, Folsom Prison Blues.
Don't ever play with guns, but I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
All right, so Folsom Prison Blues was written by Johnny Cash, apparently in 1953. Uniquely merges elements of train and prison songs, which prison is the other the other favorite subject for Mr. Cash at this point in his career. Narrates the reflections of an inmate on a murder committed in Reno and the regret. That's going to come back to bite me. The regret. It sounds kind of like bragging to me more than regret.
Yeah,
maybe not. I don't know, but I always have in mind the the Live from Folsom Prison album, which is one of my favorites. And when he sings that line, of course, these are inmates in the crowd, they cheer. Which is kind of like, hey, come on, guys.
I think this is maybe his first kind of real outlaw song, like where he's playing the part of a bad boy.
What I read was that he tried to imagine the most sinister motive possible. But yeah, it's like a bad guy in a Western almost. Minimalist style. The drum, there's no drums, but apparently they used a piece of paper under the guitar strings to mimic a snare drum sound.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is.
I miss that. I mean, that probably happens in recording. Now, there are probably people doing things like that, but...
It's so easy to just throw a drum track under it
right.
these days. I do like that about this album in general. I mean, there's no drums, but it's still kind of danceable in its own way. Yeah. You know, so there is like percussion that comes from the bass and guitar, but no drums. It's really interesting. All right, well, let's get to the closing cut. Here's Doing My Time.
I gotta do my time with an aching heart.
Yeah, so similar to the prison theme, I think he's on a chain gang. So it was written, this one is actually written by Jimmy Skinner in the 1940s and originally released by him in 1948. So I think the chain gang thing is a pretty common, idea in American folk music.
It felt like perhaps being trapped in a relationship too.
Mm. Yeah, could be a metaphor.
Well, the old ball and chain,
Yes, that's right.
So, it's not out of the question, but it's probably just me reaching.
Yeah. So the album's kind of, I guess, bookended by sort of these, Johnny Cash takes on kind of traditional folk songs.
So almost half of these are originals, and I think for that time, that's pretty unusual.
Yeah, definitely.
Pretty cool. I mean, it's only 22 minutes long or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So
27 minutes, oh, 27 right. minutes and 40 seconds.
So yeah, if you're stopped at a railroad crossing,
yeah.
You could probably listen to this whole album in the time it takes for the train to be done.
Well, time to rewind and reflect on the album as a whole. I'll start off with my clickbait headline. No drummer required. Cash brings dark to Sun Records.
Wow.
Yeah.
Once again. Just really stretching your poetic wings.
Yeah. There's many differences between, Johnny Cash and Elvis Presley. But I think one of the biggest areas is just that Johnny just seems to come from a darker place.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the whole Man in Black thing.
Right. That kind of comes later. But yeah. So it's, it's just such a classic record. It's simple, raw, and it's just a cool blend of kind of country and gospel. Feels really old-timey but still kind of modern for the time. So yeah, just I love the overall vibe. And I think when he later in his career when with the help of Rick Rubin, I think he kind of recaptures some of this early magic here.
Yes, but with much more interesting instrumentation and fuller sound. Which I think in this case, this kind of boom chicka thing, because it was a signature sound, it kind of made up for the fact that it wasn't full of strings and things that a lot of the music at the time was doing. So yeah, definitely works. My clickbait headline to describe the album. Tell me if you've heard this one. An Arkansas man walks into a Sun Records, three chords and a chip on his shoulder, walks out the godfather of outlaw country.
Ooh. Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
And he really is. I mean, him and Willie Nelson are the guys I think about most. Waylon and all those other guys come in too. But vibe-wise, overall experience, stark, minimalist, but it's consistent, that blend of rockabilly, gospel, and country work. It's haunted and intense, and even the upbeat songs are dark.
Yes.
Classic Man in Black. He was probably still more of a slate gray at this point, but he was getting there.
Yeah. And I think the album is just consistent throughout. There's lots of killer tracks. I don't think there is any filler.
No, not really. I mean, the gospel-y ones are less interesting to me, but they're good.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that. I was there when it happened.
Well, again, 27 minutes. I mean, If you can't put together 27 minutes of killer tracks and you're the level of Johnny Cash, I mean, come on, it's inevitable.
Yeah. And I do think the gospel tracks maybe just give you a break from some of the darkness.
Yeah. So you already mentioned the production, the Boom Chicka Boom and Sam Phillips. It was perfect for what this project was and for what was happening with music at the time. How do you feel about it, like, now?
I still think it sounds great. I mean, there's such romanticism about the sound of that studio and how it right. had a natural reverb that other studios try to replicate with, echo chambers and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, particularly, for something recorded in 1957, it just sounds really clean.
Question is, could a Coulter Wall or someone of today's, Stapleton, whatever, make a record like this style, this minimalist, and have it work? And I think it could.
Oh, yeah.
That's what tells me the production was good, regardless of what tools they had.
True. It helps, again, that it's only 27 minutes long.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's one I can, listen to a lot. I think as far as the Johnny Cash catalog goes, if you want something from the early period, which, this is also a time where we're still living in, in the single world. Yeah. This is an album that, really works from, beginning to end.
It's about as cohesive as it gets at that period.
Definitely.
It's not a fully formed album, I don't think, by today's standards, but it's damn close in an era when that wasn't being done. Great for vibe or nostalgia. Good for if you were taking a road trip across Arkansas, it'd be a perfect record to listen to.
Yeah, and you hinted at the legacy. I think this is kind of like the first real, true outlaw record. Mm-hmm. But it picks up on the storytelling style of previous, country stars, but it brings it into the rock and roll era.
My understanding is that people believed these things about him, that he had been a prisoner and potentially killed a man in Reno and stuff. He sold it so well through the voice and the performance and the songwriting. So right on.
I mean, he has such a, I'm not sure what it is about his voice. He doesn't have tremendous range or anything like that, but the deep baritone is just, a perfect delivery. And he doesn't have the twang that other, country right. singers had. Hank Williams was basically yodeling. And this is, I just think, much more pleasing to the ear.
Unless you're a yodel fan. Yeah. I mean, for sure. This is an icon from Arkansas. I don't know. Arkansan. He rules.
All right. Well, Johnny Cash with his hot and blue guitar might be the first classic album of the rock and roll era, featuring his signature boom chicka boom sound, raw storytelling, and minimalist arrangements that help shape the future of country and rock music. Check it out.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
It's time again for Deep Questions by Don. So, we've already discussed one major cultural treasure from Arkansas, Mr. Johnny Cash, and we'll be talking about another one shortly. But what are some other cultural treasures from the great state of Arkansas, the toothpick state?
Toothpicks were going to be my answer, but you ruined it.
Oops.
Whenever we're talking about southern states, cowboys and westerns and all that stuff, so True Grit is what came to mind. I haven't read the novel by Charles Portis, but I intend to. It is set in Arkansas. Of course, movie in 1969 with the Duke, John Wayne, and in 2010 with the Dude.
Oh, yeah. Well done.
But with Jeff Bridges, who is one of my favorite actors, the 2010 Coen Brothers version. But it references the state's landscapes and Rooster Cogburn, the whole thing about true grit and really being tough and being able to face any adversity, even when you're at your worst. Mm-hmm. It's just a great story. And I really enjoyed the movie, both of them. I prefer the 2010 version, but I'm sure if I'd been born a couple decades earlier, mm-hmm. I'd prefer the John Wayne one. But yeah, so that's what came to mind for me.
Out here in the wilderness, call me Rooster Cogburn.
Yeah, well, I thought of a couple of things. You know, again, we already referenced Sling Blade, which was the 1996 movie written and directed by Billy Bob Thornton.
Right, fried potatoes.
But of course, Walmart comes from Arkansas, and that's, you know, kind of a, there's some controversy, I guess, you know, about Walmart. But I mean, it is such a huge part of our lives, and it, you know, just shaped the retail industry.
Yeah. As someone that lived in the Midwest at the time that Walmart was starting to take over the country, it did negatively impact my small town. You know, like, it was on the outskirts of town. All the businesses downtown were closing. It felt too big.
Yeah.
And it also killed Kmart, which I liked.
Yeah,
Kmart. I liked the blue light special. So yeah, I know it took longer for Walmart to get to the East Coast and things, mm-hmm. but it was primarily to serve small towns. You know, all the surrounding small towns would have one place to go.
Yeah. And it is pretty handy to be able to get a gun or a bag of chips, or, I mean, you can, you know, get your wardrobe there. I mean, you can, I mean, it's, mm-hmm. it's pretty amazing when you think about it. All right. And then, you know, I like to mention a dish, you know, something food related that comes from these states. So one I just read about and I'm anxious to try is possum pie. Which sounds gross. It has nothing to do with the opossum, but it's basically like lots of dairy related. You know, there's like custard and cream and cream cheese and stuff like that. And I guess it's called possum pie because, you know, like playing possum, mm-hmm. sort of surprised. I guess the possum pie, you don't really know that there's all these layers underneath it.
Isn't playing possum playing dead?
Yeah, but you're like surprised by it or something. Yeah, I don't know. Like when they suddenly pop up or something. I don't know.
I just assumed it was some kind of like, you know, like mincemeat pie, which is also doesn't really have meat, but it has like suet, like fat, like beef fat in it or something. So that's what I was kind of thinking it was. So yeah,
no, this is a decadent sweet.
Decadent. Here we go. Don loves to get decadent.
All right, well, what's your favorite thing from Arkansas? Let us know on our social media, like Instagram and Facebook at Album Nerds.
All right, from the train tracks to Between the Sheets, we're going with Al Green. Albert Leornis Green, born in Forest City, Arkansas in 1946, moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan as a kid and began his musical journey in gospel, but quickly found his voice in secular soul. Worked closely with his producer, Willie Mitchell, at High Records in Memphis, Tennessee. Green became one of the definitive artists of 70s soul, known for effortless falsetto, intimate delivery, spiritual undertones. Mm-hmm. So the album is Call Me from 1973, and widely considered Al's masterpiece, one of his most elegant, emotionally resonant soul albums probably ever recorded. And at under 36 minutes, we're taking it easy on y'all this week, so please do listen to both of these albums. It's concise, it's deliberate, it packs a wide emotional range, longing, heartbreak, romance, spiritual yearning, crafted by the producer Willie Mitchell. And the high rhythm section was the band, Teenie Hodges on guitar, Leroy and Charles Hodges bass and keys, and Howard Grimes on drums. It's warm, it's got that nice cozy analog sound. Mm-hmm. It's characterized by gentle sway rather than forceful impact. So why don't we jump in with the opening track, Call Me, Come Back Home. So that was the third single from the album. Well, it came a long way album-wise, production-wise, from 1957 to 1973 here. Yes. The song combines soulful balladry with that Memphis R&B sound. The song itself is a heartfelt plea for a loved one to return, and Green acknowledges the fading connection, offering freedom, you know, if you love someone, set them free, kind of a situation. Mm-hmm. But gently reminds the partner that he'll always be there. This one reached number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100, number 2 on the R&B chart. It's smooth and sorrowful, and it's a gently urgent call to rekindle a love lost.
Gently urgent. Ooh. Mm-hmm. I just love kind of the laid back groove of the whole album. You know, it's kind of, I mean, I guess it's kind of pre-Quiet Storm. It's not quite as...
It's more like a bubble bath.
Ooh, yeah, okay.
Maybe we could put on some Al Green and take a bubble bath.
But everything's pretty subtle, you know, for the most part. You know, the horns, the guitar, the organ, you know, it's all just...
It's so smooth.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, nothing really hits you hard, and it works. You know, I mean, sometimes you want to be hit hard. Sometimes you want to be caressed. I think
the moments where you are hit hard is when he hits the falsetto.
Yeah,
like I found myself making a face as if I was playing guitar or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like guitar face would come on when some of those moments when he hits those soaring falsetto notes. Just a beautiful voice.
Yeah, I think we'll talk more about production later, but I think the way this album is presented, it kind of frames the voice well.
Yeah.
You know, really, I mean, Al Green is the star of the show.
Mm-hmm. All right, why don't we continue on our journey through the record? You know, my personal pick, I went with probably the biggest song on it, Here I Am, Come and Take Me. This one was co-written by Al Green and Teenie Hodges. It's the second single off the album. This one reached number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100, number 2 on the Soul charts. Seemed to have done pretty well with this one. Vocal performance is the highlight. The transitions from the warm croon to the falsetto. And then the tight soul backing band.
Yeah. And the dun, 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 dun. Yep. I love that.
lyrically, the song's a heartfelt declaration. Basically a plea of romantic longing and devotion, setting aside troubles and completely surrendering to love. That groove is driven by Teenie Hodges' guitar and the horns you just mentioned. Chugging, syncopated rhythm, but it's funky and flirty. It's a groove-heavy declaration of desire, you know? It's sexy.
I like that he does a lot of call-and-response stuff with himself.
Yeah. On headphones in particular, I was catching that much more clearly. His own voice, like in one ear and then slightly behind it in the other ear.
Yeah, it's almost like a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other.
Yeah. Well, he did have his struggles through his personal life, so that's sure probably did. How he felt. He had a little Al Green on his shoulder. All right, Don, so while enjoying this treasure, what song really hit you? What do you want to talk about?
All right, well, let's talk about You Ought to Be With Me.
Not dissimilar to Let's Stay Together.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Yeah, that one part sounds like it's going to go right into...
Yeah.
So You Ought to Be With Me was written by Al Green, Al Jackson Jr., and Willie Mitchell. You know, like much of the rest of the album, kind of persuasion and romantic devotion. Kind of starts with a conversational tone. Sit right down and talk to me about how you want to be. So, yeah. So, the high rhythm section, I think, sounds pretty good on this one. You know, particularly the bass line, I think, is kind of interesting. That's Leroy Flick Hodges. And you've got some three-part harmonies with the horns. You got a trumpet, a tenor sax, and a trombone. You know, really, just a great instrumental palette there.
Yeah. I can't believe how much is packed into this record sound-wise. Like, it seems simple on the surface, but when you're really listening on headphones, there just seems to be a lot more going on than is was really necessary for the era. So I think it is I wasn't there. But for me, from this era of soul albums, this is among the top for sure. I mean, this is consistency, the songwriting, the delivery from all the moving parts. It's just really awesome.
Yeah, it's it's right around the time that like Marvin Gaye and you know Stevie Wonder were doing these, you know, big works. And this doesn't feel big. You know, but it's, I don't know. It's so well done, so well crafted and simple. You know, in some ways, it's just as significant as those big records.
Yeah, I mean, the songwriting, I think, is super important here. I mean, Al Green contributes to the majority of these songs and then does a couple of covers, a Hank Williams song, I'm So Lonely I Could Cry, and then a Funny How Time Slips Away, a Willie Nelson song, tapping into those Southern roots, which I think is cool, but so much Al Green here with his bandmates. Sometimes it's so important for there to be that connection between singer and song when they've really contributed to it, and you can hear it. And this is all very real.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to close out the album, we get a little more on the spiritual side. This one is called Jesus Is Waiting. Jeez. That's the best Jesus song I've ever heard.
Jeez.
And I spent a lot of time in church. That should be a hymn in church. It's an epic closer, nearly 7 minutes of spiritual catharsis.
That could have gone on for 15 minutes. I could do it all day.
It'd be fine. Sweet. Yeah. Yep. Jeez. From whisper to wail, Green pours everything into it. It's about transcendence in a way, you know. I feel like it's thanking your creator or the people, or even if you don't believe in religion, you could take it as more of a people in your life, friends, family that have blessed you in some way, you know, that help you when you're down. And I think it's a relationship song about, you know, and he grew up as a Christian, a gospel singer, and is a reverend now, I believe, has been for years. It's like his relationship, his friendship, his connection to God and Jesus, and it's done in a way that you can feel it's real. So whether you believe in it or not, you can tell that this man feels it.
Yeah, I think like the best gospel or faith-based songs are ones where it's less about the words and it's just about the feeling. I mean, God, what a vocal performance.
Oh, I know.
It feels really authentic. Most of the words are just Jesus is waiting.
Yep. But like the thank you. It just sounds like he's pouring his heart out. And that's passion. And there's a lot of passion in faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things that I think draws people to it. So, yeah, I mean, that's a great closer. I didn't, like, when I first pulled this album up and I saw that that was the name of the closer, I'm like, oh, boy, this is going to be rough, but it is beautiful. So, now that we've talked about four of the key tracks, why don't we rewind and reflect and talk about the album as a whole, kind of put the pieces together, maybe mention some other songs that we didn't get a chance to dig into. But I'll start off with my clickbait headline to describe Call Me. Arkansas's smoothest export made an album where heartbreak and horns sound like a spiritual awakening.
Yes.
Can I get an amen? Can I get an amen?
You can hear the spirit in all of these songs. Holy Spirit, Spirit of Love, whatever it is he's tapping into at that moment, he taps in hard and it comes through.
Yeah. My spirit is awakened.
There you go. Yeah. It flows like a slow, sweet sermon, equal parts spiritual and romantic, like, you know, we've talked about, but the production and the vocals, the vibe, it's just so dreamy and emotionally rich. It's just a pleasure to listen to.
Yeah, well, my clickbait headline for Call Me is Soul on Speed Dial. Al Green's Call Me rings true.
Oh, I get it. That works.
Does anybody use Speed Dial anymore?
I get, well, there's a form of it where you just go to your contacts and call.
I guess that's so. What it is. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to end up saying the same things as you. I mean, just the soulful vibe, there's an intimacy to it. Yeah, still something kind of personal about it that just really works.
It makes you feel lighter.
Yeah.
Like it does for me. Like when I listen to it, like I feel good.
Yeah.
I'm in a good mood. I'm refreshed, rejuvenated. It's a perfect album, I think, as far as killer tracks go. The songs we talked about all fit that category, I think.
Yeah, even the Hank Williams cover, I'm so, like when I saw that on there, I'm like, I don't know. God, I mean, so well. I mean, it feels like a soul song. You know, it doesn't feel like an old country song, really.
But he also, he restrained himself, too. He didn't go nuts with it.
Yeah.
Like, it was true to the original, but with a soulful overcoat.
Yeah.
Stand Up, I thought it was an awesome anthem for faith and perseverance. Steady Groove. It was one of those with the spiritual vibe, and that's an uplifting track. Your Love is Like the Morning Sun. Sunshine, rhythm, easygoing. It feels like a warm hug.
It really does. Yeah. Not a bad track.
No, that's pretty rare. Replayable, of course. This is an eternal weekend relax record, road trip, feeling down. It can do it all.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of much about it until now when I started comparing it to like Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye records. I mean, those get so heavy. You know, I mean, they're very socially conscious or political, and you're not always in the mood for that. But, you know, I think this one, I mean, you can, you know, put on anytime.
Yeah, it's like a cross between your Marvin Gaye's and Stevie Wonder's and Lionel Richie. So if you took those two worlds of soul and put them together, I feel like that's what you're getting here.
Yeah.
It's full of Southern grace, spirituality, and emotional honesty. It's a true pillar of 1970s soul, and the legacy and influence are undeniable. Congratulations, Arkansas.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it might even just be underrated because it's not, you know, it doesn't really make comments on society or politics. So I'm ashamed of myself for, you know, kind of not really having this record on my radar for all these years because it's a gem.
Yeah, I need to find a copy of it. So yeah, Al Green's Call Me captures introspection, romance, and grace. It's deeply spiritual, rooted in faith, hardship, and redemption, hallmarks of Arkansas storytelling. And I urge you to spin this one on your next road trip.
Done.
That was easy.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right, so we spent the week cruising through beautiful Arkansas. Did you have a chance to check out anything from other places?
Well, yes, of course I did. I found the time. Just let me pull some recommendations out of my saxophone case. That's a Bill Clinton reference.
That's right. Well done.
Oh, Arsenio, how much I miss you. There's a big hubbub about this fella named Oliver Anthony from Farmville, Virginia. He burst onto the scene in 2023 with the viral hit Rich Men North of Richmond. He's built a reputation as an independent blue-collar voice. It was just basically, I think it was like TikTok or Instagram. It was like videos of him performing this song out in the middle of the woods. And this redheaded, bearded dude just took off. This new single is called Scornful Woman. Let's take a listen.
Wow.
So, yeah, this song was released early June of 2025. It's a fierce, no-holds-barred divorce anthem. So it was written during a period of bitterness over a painful divorce. So I guess there was a lot of depression and pain, like real stuff. And it comes out. You can hear it in the song. So I'm hoping an album is going to be featuring this one.
Very, very aggressive.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. I really like the guy. Next up, from my vinyl collection with some of the terrible losses of important people in the music world, I just happened to find a copy of Sly and the Family Stone, There's a Riot Going On from 1971 on vinyl. And
we did this one.
Yes, we did do this one. And Sly Stone passed away the last few weeks. So why don't we jump in with a little bit of the better known singles, It's a Family Affair.
Blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
So Sly Stone led the racially and gender integrated Sly and the Family Stone, pioneering funk and soul and psychedelic music in the late 60s, early 70s. Bigger hits like Everyday People and Dance to the Music are well known to everyone, but this particular album marked a shift in tone. It's murky, it's brooding, it's introspective, and a reflection of political unrest and personal turmoil. So it's a really interesting album in the catalog of Sly and the Family Stone. Not so much party anthems, but definitely some great songwriting and some concepts for deep introspection.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is the one I would pick if I had to pick one, Sly and the Family Stone.
As an album, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of those other ones are more fun for party stuff. But if you're like as a artistic statement, I guess this would be the one. Mm-hmm. What about you, Donnie?
Well, we'll talk more about some of the folks that we lost in the past few weeks. So, you know, Brian Wilson, unfortunately, passed away. If you've listened to the show, you know, I, you know, like the guy a little bit. It's been on my radar for a while, but I finally picked up a copy of David Leaf's Smile, The Rise, Fall, and Resurrection of Brian Wilson. So this is a book that focuses exclusively on that sort of legendary album that kind of fell apart, you know, when Brian Wilson was really struggling. But, you know, he came back in 2004 and actually, you know, finished the album. So here's a cut from that finished version. Here's Surf's Up.
Aboard a tidal wave.
Yeah, I think I've listened to The Smile record. I probably should.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's I don't know. There's something about it that's not quite right because it's not the Beach Boys.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, when you're revisiting something, you know, 40 years later almost, I don't know. I mean, I think it's great that he did it, and it is a good record to listen to, but it's probably not exactly what it would have been at the time.
Right. Yeah. If it had been completed with the group.
Yeah. But again, so the book is Smile, The Rise, Fall, and Resurrection of Brian Wilson by David Leaf, who's actually written several books about the Beach Boys. Okay. And one other person who we lost, who's not quite as known, Douglas McCarthy, a British fella who was in the band Nitzer-Ebb or Nitzer-Ebb. I never know how to pronounce
it. I think it's Nitzer-Ebb.
But I figured I'd talk about their debut album, That Total Age, from 1987. Here's a track called Murderous.
Whoa.
So I had always thought of these guys as industrial, but I've been seeing people use the term electronic body music or EBM.
Okay.
BM. but yeah, kind of like just a dancier electronic, but very aggressive music. Not a ton of melody going on, but you know, we did that Nine Inch Nails record last week. If you were into that, yeah. you might like Nitzer-Ebb.
Nice.
So what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. Also, don't forget to dig on some other music podcasts like Astrovert. Jake and Mike from the band Astroverts dive into band journeys, rock news, and music from underground and underheard artists worldwide. It's the Astrovert cool. Podcast, everywhere you find podcasts.
Check it out, people.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about time on the show when I'm reminded of the words of a classic joke about Arkansas. Arkansas is the only state mentioned in the Bible because it says that Noah looked out of the ark and saw land. With that in mind, let's bring out the wheel of musical discovery to find out what great state we'll be visiting next on this Bands Across America journey.
Next stop on our Bands Across America tour, Indiana. From the birthplace of pop royalty to gritty rock roots, you will be diving into albums that reflect the wide-ranging sounds and stories of the Hoosier State.
Hoosier Daddy.
Jeez.
The Hoosier State, right?
Yes.
Indiana. Hoosier Daddy. I'm sure there's t-shirts of that. There's got to be. Yeah, a lot to choose from in Indiana.
Nice.
I look forward to visiting.
We'll hang out on the Notre Dame campus.
Yeah, maybe hit Gary, Indiana, birthplace of the Jacksons.
Oh, that's right. Right. Well, what's your favorite record from the state of Indiana? What else are you listening to? Email us at podcast@albumnerds.com or follow us on Instagram and other social media at albumnerds. You can visit albumnerds.com to listen to all 296 episodes. And the best way to support the show is to share it. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you ever so much for joining us here on the Album Nerds Podcast. I don't know what happened. So, was it what they turned to Jimmy Carter or something?
I don't know. It's an Arkansasian.
I don't know what happened. Anyway, thank you for joining us. We'll catch you next time in Hoosierville.
Album Nerds Podcast, that's a mighty good show. Bands Across America's the road to know. Want a summer playlist? Just get on board. Album Nerds are driving in, you won't be bored.
Okay, yeah, it's not terrible. I mean, you're still disrespecting very important artists.
Yes.
Nice try, yeah. It's kind of good flow.
Yeah.
Johnny's looking down on you, giving you the finger.